What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Caitlin Dickerson. This is The Daily. Today, in the aftermath of 9/11, the U.S. government developed a new set of interrogation techniques to be used on terror suspects in secret prisons around the world. The result was a CIA torture program so brutal it was later abolished. But until now, no one has been held accountable. It's Wednesday, June 21st.
Mr. Salim, do you know what a flashback is?
When does your flashback mean?
Flashback. When were you a mimi in the end?
Yes.
What is a flashback?
Flashback mean?
Kole ang mimi kukumbuka kitu. Lichopita, kitu cha nyuma unakikumbuka. Ang kinakuja kila kitu mbele yako.
Like thinking of something that happened before.
Okay. Do you experience flashbacks?
Well, what is a flashback?
Yeah.
Yes.
And what do you flash back to?
Mara nyingi mara kitu moja.
Most of the time, one thing.
Okay. And what is that thing?
Kitu kama kitu gani? Yo kitu moja ni gani?
Mateso.
Tortured. Being tortured.
Between 2002 and 2008, the CIA has acknowledged that at least 39 men were subjected to enhanced interrogation techniques in their secret prisons. One of them, Gul Rahman, died as a result. Now that victim's family and two others who were interrogated are plaintiffs in a civil suit, not against the CIA, which is protected. Instead, they're targeting two government contractors, psychologists.
Mr. Souter, are you saying that everything that happened to you while you were at Cobalt was part of the program that was designed by Drs. Mitchell and Jessup?
Nah.
Yes.
Michael spoke with our colleague Sherry Fink about the role of these psychologists in the program.
You know, I know it's easy and glib to say that if someone who is the expert on Al-Qaeda just told you they're getting ready to set off a nuclear bomb, that you can say, no, no, hands off, I don't want to participate. But that wasn't the way it was for me. I was willing to help. If what happened as a result of that was that I couldn't go back to doing marital therapy, I was okay with that.
Who are James Mitchell and Bruce Jessen?
James Mitchell and Bruce Jessen are psychologists.
I have a 4-year degree in psychology.
They're retired military psychologists.
I have a master's degree in psychology from the University of Alaska in Anchorage.
When they were in the military, they ran and were very involved in so-called SEER training.
And just so the director is clear, SEER stands for?
Survival, evasion, resistance, and escape.
The resolve of our great nation.
After 9/11
is being tested.
There was a sense in America that there could be another attack at any time.
But make no mistake, we will show the world that we will pass this test.
There was this sense of we need to get information from them, suspected terrorists, before the next attack.
I know I took the appropriate actions as the commander-in-chief.
And so the CIA turned to James Mitchell.
Okay.
James Mitchell got his colleague, Bruce Jessen, involved.
And that's what initiated me being called.
They became CIA contractors. To get involved with questioning suspects, terrorism suspects in the war on terror.
Jim and I went into a cubicle.
They literally tapped it out on a typewriter, a proposal for 12 EITs, enhanced interrogation techniques, that our military was using in its training programs to help our soldiers resist interrogation. So you could kind of reverse engineer those techniques and apply them in the interrogation of actual terrorism suspects.
We provided them with a list. We didn't develop a bunch of new EITs.
Okay. Everything from waterboarding, which is like a simulated drowning, to putting men into small boxes, to sleep deprivation techniques, so-called walling.
Yes, I thought walling was effective.
Men are like slammed against a flexible plywood wall, which creates a terrifying sound.
It jostles the inner ear. It makes a really loud noise. It sounds pretty tremendous.
So these were the techniques that they tapped up on this typewriter.
And of these, which ones did they not adopt? It would be a shorter list than the ones that they did.
I don't think they did. They didn't do mock burial. I think that's the only one. I don't recall insects either. I think
insects.
Yeah, the use of insects to terrify the men.
And did these two men's involvement stop at typing out, developing this list of techniques?
No, it didn't. They were then asked to actually apply the techniques.
The worry and intensity had reached a peak because the CIA had been sorely chastised and felt culpable about 9/11.
Abu Zubaydah was the first suspect with whom they worked and waterboarded multiple times. This was a suspect who the CIA felt like they just weren't getting enough out of, mm-hmm. that they felt like maybe he's got some really important information and it could stop another attack. Now, I think we know now that generally once you've held somebody for a period of time, the immediate usefulness of their information is going to go down. But at the time, if we're to believe what the CIA has said, there was some sense of urgency around his interrogation. And so Mitchell and Jessen are sent out and they begin working with his interrogation.
But I've been in the military my whole life and was committed to and used to doing what I was ordered to do. That's the way I considered this circumstance. And so I went.
And they started to apply the techniques.
Themselves.
Had you ever actually performed any intelligence gathering interrogations before this?
No.
What happened?
Well, they waterboarded him multiple times over a period of a couple weeks.
But still, I was thinking that I wasn't going to be the guy doing it. Mm-hmm. I thought it could be done safely. I thought he would be uncomfortable. It sucks, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know that it's painful.
Well, I saw an interview.
But it's distressing. Mm-hmm.
You're there to prevent, in this case, a catastrophic nuclear attack against your own country. Your wife, your children, your grandparents, you. If I may emphasize a little bit. If I want to get information from you, Dor?
Sure.
If I want to get information from you, Dor, I don't want to slap you, and I don't want to wall you. I don't want to waterboard you, even if you're my enemy, who we believe has information that's going to devastate our country. We want you to cooperate. We know that you're a soldier of some type. You're a terrorist, but these men were like Jedi Knights. These men that we worked on were utterly and totally committed. They had the faith that most people of faith wish they had. Unwaverable.
So after waterboarding Abu Zubaydah several times, at some point they say that they realized that there was no utility to continuing. And so their recommendation back to CIA headquarters was, let's stop.
What was the response from the CIA when they asked to stop?
What they said was, well, you guys have lost your spine. I think the word that was actually used is that you guys are pussies, there's going to be another attack in America, and the blood of dead civilians are going to be on your hands. If you won't follow through with this, then we're going to send somebody out there who will.
We even talked to Zubaydah about if he had any ideas what we could do besides that. And as you probably know, he cautioned us not to stop using it because of various reasons that I don't need to state now.
And he alleges that Abu Zubaydah said, no, keep using the water board because only that will allow the other terrorism suspects to actually give you information. Like, if they're actually being subjected to something that extreme, then that would be the only way that they could, like, cooperate with you. Now, we don't have Abu Zubaydah's mm-hmm. side of that because he's still in Guantanamo. You know, we're depending on the psychologists for that version of the events. But it was pretty shocking.
Well, right. I mean, it's pretty it has to be unusual for interrogators to ask the person they're interrogating how to interrogate them. What does that tell you, if anything?
They didn't have experience interrogating terrorism suspects. Mm-hmm. So it is quite notable that they would go so far as to ask one of the people they were interrogating for, you know, feedback on their techniques. That is a bit shocking.
It also maybe suggests some level of self-doubt, maybe.
I'm not sure, but they certainly spoke that really for the first time that I've heard, you get the sense of a man, particularly with Dr. Jessen, wrestling with this.
I think any normal conscientious man would have to consider carefully doing something like this. When I was called and asked to do this, I paused, I thought, I wondered. I took every precaution that I could. I asked every question that I could. I waited until the weight of the entire nation's judicial system weighed in on it and told us it was legal. I weighed that against the fact that they kept telling me every day a nuclear bomb was going to be exploded in the United States, and that because I told them to stop, I'd lost my nerve, and it was going to be my fault if I didn't continue. So I thought a great deal about it, sir. And I assume you would have, too, if you would have been in my place and stood up and gone to defend your nation. It was an emotional time, Dor. So don't interpret my emotionality as a personal affront.
Not at all.
But these are serious questions you're asking.
It always feels like compensation helps clarify motivation. What were Drs. Jessen and Mitchell paid for the work they did here?
The number adds up to $81 million
wow.
for their consulting company that they eventually formed to consult and get the contracts from the CIA.
The United States government paid two psychologists $81 million create and carry out this program.
It is a lot of money. They argue that they had to pay a lot of people, so it sounds more than it is, but
$81 million, it seems, under any circumstances, is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Did these two doctors believe that the techniques they were using, did they ever believe that it caused pain?
Boy, this is, again, one of the really striking dichotomies here. They go overboard, both Drs. Mitchell and Jessen, and also a couple of CIA officials who were deposed, all say,
Do you think that people have suffered long-term harm as a result of that?
I don't know that for a fact. It's one of those things that you can establish. If they're out there and that happened, then, you know, show me the data.
Show me the evidence.
So do you think that's possible? As a psychologist, do you think it's possible?
Repeat the question.
Okay. You know what occurred with regard to this?
When you hear the detainee side of this, they tell a very different story.
Is this long-lasting psychological harm that you're describing something that one of the plaintiffs in this case has experienced?
So can you describe for me, when you were taken into the room, what occurred during the interrogation?
Yeah, I think both plaintiffs in the case expressed that they had undergone long-term harm. I think I would say Suleiman Salim seems to be profoundly affected.
I remember being put in a box.
He's a Tanzanian man, and he's been suffering from depression, post-traumatic stress disorder. When you see him. You can see how he's sort of withdrawn.
I remember being hanged.
He's pretty wary.
And then they're punching me on the wall.
He was beaten.
I knew that they tied a cloth on my neck and they were punching me.
Okay.
Hung in chains, he was sleep deprived.
I also remember being handicapped and naked in the room with no any clothes on.
He was doused with water. It wasn't exactly waterboarding, but also like that sense of drowning.
I remember being put on the ground on a plastic bag and water is being poured on me. And there was a plastic jug, plastic water jug being put. They were knocking my rectal area with it.
This is all laid out, actually, in the Senate Intelligence Committee report. So there's actual documentation from our own government. We don't just have to rely on his version of it, but his version of it matches up.
Do you presently have any injuries to your waist as a result of being tied to the wall, as you described?
Yeah.
Yes.
And what are those injuries?
Knee gani.
Nani uma.
It's painful.
Do you presently experience the pain?
Sasa hivi, unasikia maumivu. Yes.
Can you describe for me the pain that you feel presently?
Unaweza kunielezea hiyo maumivu yenye unasikia sasa hivi?
Tuambie kile wale kasiri kabla nifunge hapo utaona. Nifunge kwa nusu saa afuta juu maumivu yake.
Huh?
Labda nifunge hapo wewe kwa saa moja, labda utajua maumivu yake kwa wapi.
Maybe I need to tie you here so that for 1 hour so you can feel the pain if you want to know the pain.
We take a break.
We can take a break.
Time is 3:45. We're off the record.
He underwent a lot in the secret CIA prisons.
And who does he fault for this long-term impact?
He faults the people who held him and applied this to him. And he faults Drs. Mitchell and Jessen.
Do you know a man named Dr. James Mitchell?
Even though they weren't actually the ones who worked with him.
I don't know him.
Do you know a man named Dr. Bruce Jessen?
Unajua mtu mwenye anaitwa Dr. Bruce Jessen? I don't know him.
And that's one of their defenses. They say, we never met this man. Mm-hmm. And so why should we be held responsible for what he went through?
So you can see that those are two of the plaintiffs in this case?
I see both of those guys.
Mm-hmm. If you go across the list of EITs, that's basically your list, right?
Objection.
I don't think this is my list. This is a list that includes the techniques that I recommended to them, but this is someone else's list.
Well, let's go through it. I mean, isn't each of these items the same items that were on your list?
No.
I mean, okay, sleep deprivation, that was on your list, right?
Correct.
I also remember being handicapped and naked in the room with no any clothes on.
And then the next one is nudity. That was on the list, right?
Correct.
Initially?
I remember being tied on the wall.
Stress positions, that was on the list.
Yes.
I remember being put in a box.
Cramped confinement, that was on the list.
Yes.
Water is being poured on me.
Water dousing, that was on the list.
No.
Okay, water dousing was not on the list.
No.
You sure?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Punching me on the wall.
Walling, that was on the list.
Yes.
And waterboard, that was on the list.
Yes.
Okay, and the X's show which of
Hermann Wilhelm Göring.
It feels, Sherry, that a case like this is inevitably going to draw comparisons to these big moments in history where the world has asked for accountability after a traumatic event, and it is individuals who are asked to be held accountable, not big governments, the classic case being the Nuremberg trials. Does that feel apt?
Who do you want brought to justice?
ده برای محكمة هما خوابل اگر سر سیاهی چیزی میتانیم یا نمیتانیم یک جدا گفت
If I could do anything on CIA, that's a separate issue.
خو یعنی دو نفر سن مثل شما خو بگی دکتر بودین شما چرا این قسم میکردین؟
The two doctors, why would they do that, such a thing?
I think there's a larger sort of philosophical thing or a larger point to think about here, which is what is the role of the individual in a system when the system goes astray? And this is important for all of us to think about. And I wrote for the New York Times about a really stressful situation inside a hospital after Hurricane Katrina, where doctors ultimately told me in my reporting they intentionally hastened patients' deaths by injecting them with drugs because they were so desperate and didn't know if they'd be rescued, and became a criminal case around that. And the question really boiled down to what is the responsibility of an individual within a whole system that fails? And I think that may be the importance of a case like this, this idea that we were ordered to do this, we were in a system, and we followed orders. So it'll be interesting to see what, if this case goes to trial, what is made of that.
And I'm not afraid. And I did my duty and I stood up and I went to war. And I'll stand up to any of them again. So why would I want to complicate my life more by going out in public when the public's already made up their mind about things?
The case against Dr. Mitchell and Dr. Jessen is scheduled to go to trial September 5th in Spokane, Washington. We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for the New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray. And that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today. Late Tuesday night, voters in Georgia's 6th congressional district elected Karen Handel, narrowly avoiding a Democratic upheaval that would have stripped the seat from Republicans for the first time in nearly 40 years. Candidates and outside groups poured $55 million into the campaign, making it the most expensive House race in history. The special election was called to fill the seat left open by the appointment of Tom Price as health secretary, and the outcome was considered an indicator of whether Democrats might take back the House in 2018 in a rebuke of President Trump.
I'm going to stop a car.
And
I'm going to check the IDs. I have reason to pull it over.
Days after a Minnesota police officer was acquitted of all charges in the fatal shooting of Philando Castile, a newly released dashboard video shows how quickly that 2016 traffic stop turned deadly.
Reason I pulled you over, your brake lights are out. So you only have one active brake light, and that's going
to
be your pattern.
In the video, which was shown to jurors in the case.
Sir, I have to tell you, I do have a firearm on me.
Don't reach for it, then. Don't pull it out.
The officer is seen firing a volley of bullets into the car.
Don't pull it out.
Within seconds of Castile telling him that he was carrying a firearm. Millions of people had already seen the moments that followed that shooting, which Castile's girlfriend live-streamed on Facebook last year. That's it for The Daily. I'm Caitlin Dickerson. See you tomorrow.